So welcome, everybody, and thanks for taking some time for us this evening. You know, it's hard to believe we are at kind of that penultimate point of getting ready to welcome our students back. And I, you know, I hope that we have a really positive, really last quarter of our school year. We've been working hard on some plans, some of which you're going to see tonight. Some of which are still, you know, still to be decided, but by the end of the evening, you should have a sense of what we're thinking, where we're going, and what's coming next. As always, if you have questions, if there are questions for the good of the order, type them into the chat. If there are things that are more specific to your individual students, just feel free to you know, send me or one of the counselors a message. We'll be happy to get back in touch with you, especially if there's something you don't want written in the chat function for all to see. So we're going to go through tonight a little bit of a timeline of where things are for the next few days, the rest of the school year, what things will look like when the students come back. Some of our thinking as far as what not only the schedule will look like, but what day-to-day things are going to look like, which is admittedly going to be different than it was pre-pandemic, but certainly different than it was over the last few months this school year. To begin, I just want to, you know, really, as we start to think about life post-pandemic, there have been some elements, I think, of hybrid learning, remote learning, synchronous, asynchronous, all these different terms that we have learned over the last few years and months, last few months and year, that are probably going to stick with us for a little bit of time. There are definitely some positives, and there are some things that I think we have learned about ourselves as educators, about ourselves as school leaders, and about our students. And I think the biggest one that has really hit me, quite honestly, is just how much the students had valued the relationships they had with people in the building, and how much they wanted to be back here. You know, I know parents wanted their students back here. I know that the staff wants people back here, but sometimes high school students who can sometimes be apathetic or ambivalent about the schoolwork, I think it's safe to say that the vast majority of them are really looking forward to being back here. And while we admittedly have some anxiety about what the next few weeks are going to look like and what it could bring, we are also very much excited to have them back, more of them back, and more of them back at once. I don't want to say that things are, you know, right now all neat and tidy in a bow, but we're honestly, we're doing, I think the more I talk to people, the more people are starting to get to this, the extent possible, comfortable with what our reality is going to look like. So some dates, and there's a little asterisk next to Monday, April 5th. I'll explain that in a minute. Our plan is to be back that week for full-time in-person learning, and full-time means the day, kind of looking at the school day the way it used to look, starting with the students in the building around 7:20 to 7:25, and first class beginning at 7:30 and ending at 1:55. We'll have 2 weeks to work this out and to work out some of the kinks before we have school vacation week. And as I have done this year, and I think as a lot of folks have done, Mr. DiMeglio and I started the year with, okay, let's get to Columbus Day. And then it was, if we can get to Columbus Day, that was our first couple of weeks, let's see if we can get to Veterans Day and then Thanksgiving. And then it was, let's check off the holiday break. And following the holiday break, it was, if we can get to the holiday break, we can get to February vacation. And now we've got some more milestones ahead of us. May 14th is a half day of school. It's also the prom day. We are expecting to host our senior prom on May 14th. June 5th is scheduled to be our graduation day which is a Saturday, with June 6th as a rain date. And then June 22nd is the last day of school. So we've kind of chunked this out in like 3 week intervals thereabouts, which make this seem very, very manageable, at least as we start looking at, you know, kind of those initial first couple of weeks back and so on and so forth. Our weekly schedule, starting the week of April 5th, students will be in school, class time, 7:30 to 1:55, including Wednesday. You know, I know there've been a lot of rumors out there. I've had some folks that have reached out to me, the people who've had questions. Wednesday is going to be a full day of school as well. Again, looking very much like our old schedule. For students who are not returning, students who are electing at this time to stay in the remote model, that is going to also be a full day of school. And it's a full day of remote school. I'll talk a little bit about what that could look like for our remote students, because I don't expect them to be sitting on a Zoom necessarily for 6-7 hours at a time. Asynchronous learning, beginning at the end of April, no longer counts. So that term of like, well, we're going to give the kids Wednesday to themselves, that doesn't mean that we're not going to give students independent work, and students who are remote aren't going to have work being done independently. The difference is that that work being done independently is just going to mirror whatever is happening on campus. So, you know, as a former English teacher, I can think of a class situation where, you know, I might have had the students do an independent reading and then, answer some questions. It may look like that's happening asynchronously at home. There's a difference between asynchronous and independent. Our daily schedule is also going to revert back to what we had in the past. We toyed with a couple of different models here. We did get some feedback from the staff. The vast majority, and I say, you know, almost an overwhelming majority, wanted to return back to the sixth class schedule, which is what our students would have been equipped with prior to this year. Again, six classes every day with one dropping. We are still going to use time on Wednesday. The feedback from the students has been that the time on Wednesday to catch up, to work with teachers, to do, to have things like office hours, to check in with counselors and to get extra help has been extremely helpful, but we're going to work that into our regular schedule. The students are going to go through their regular classes. We're just going to be a little bit more flexible with what teachers do on Wednesday. And as students are filtering into class, there's not going to be necessarily that requirement that day be, you know, necessarily new content. We might see that used as sort of that weekly check-in time. Some teachers may choose to do that on a different day, but we want to build in that relationship time, that time for kids to get the help that they need. But again, Wednesday is going to be full in, not a half day, not remote, just like every other day. And every day in our schedule is still going to have time built in for mask breaks, passing time, and academic time. So we believe fairly strongly that even time that students pass from one place to another is an opportunity to learn something. It's an opportunity to learn how to get from point A to point B as quickly as possible. It's an opportunity to be responsible in the hallway. We don't have a ton of problems, I think, because of that. And, we're not going to have a lot of crowdedness in the hallways, typically. In fact, Mr. DiMeglio and I were talking about that as we were squiring around superintendent candidates the last couple of days, that our kids are genuinely, our students are awesome about getting from point A to point B. And then when they're in class, they don't tend to wander very much. So we're not too worried about passing time. Mask breaks are going to stay very consistent with what we've had so far. And that system has worked. We're in the good fortune that the weather has improved. So that's going to also give us opportunities for teachers to run class outside and keep kids spread out if they so desire. So there's a lot of benefit to our time frame here. And so looking at our schedule, This is initially what we had come up with. There may be some maneuvering of the minutes. The reason why you see the classes after lunch and class, and we'll talk about lunch at length as part of this, because I know that's a big topic of conversation. Those last couple of classes are shorter because after lunch this year in particular, our students have been used to 2-3 30-minute classes that go very, very quickly. And we also find that toward the end of the day, our students tend to lose some of that cognitive endurance, particularly since it's been more than a year since they've been in school for a full day. So we are tapering, would be the term we would use in my days as a track coach, in that second half of the day, and trying to feed up those classes earlier in the day. Period two is a little bit longer because there's a mask break built in, and the lunch block, which we'll talk about, is also a longer block of instructional time with between 20 and 23, 24 minutes for lunch, which is exactly consistent with where we were, again, pre-pandemic. A lot of things aren't going to change. Arrival and dismissal are not going to change. When students get dropped off, it's going to be exactly as we've done it this year. I started off the morning today with kind of watching as parents are pulling in and keeping the traffic away from the staff parking lot in front of the building, keeping the traffic away from the buses, and having people looping around as they have all year has been really, really helpful. I know Mr. DiMeglio and I spent a lot of time last summer dealing with traffic patterns, and having the kids waiting on the buses and having the students come in at 7:20, it cuts down on some of the foot traffic in the building before class, and it gets kids in basically in and in class right away. The buses pull in typically between 7:10 and 7:15. There's a few minutes. It's not a very long period of time. Those who are dropped off, we've been able to accommodate them, either waiting outside, waiting in parent vehicles. Dismissal is going to look a little bit differently. And I'm sharing about dismissal, and I'm going to be probably more blunt than I've been in the past. Dismissal here has never been perfect. The road in, the road out, there's one entry, there's one exit. It is not easy to get out. And we have had, it sometimes looks like the wild, wild west out there, not going to lie, in the past. We need the buses to leave first, because those buses, which have a little bit of a different protocol with how they drop off this year as well, have to get to the next school on time. Otherwise, their whole run gets really messed up for the little kids, particularly the second and third graders. So as we look at dismissal, 100% the students who are leaving on buses are being dismissed first. You saw a couple of dismissal times there, 150, 155. In that first window, those first few minutes, we're going to dismiss the students who get on buses so that the buses will leave first. The parents who are picking up, the pickup is going to be the same as we're doing right now for pickup and drop off. It's not going to happen in front of the building. It's not going to happen in the staff parking lot. We're going to release parents and student drivers, students who are being picked up by parents and student drivers after the buses are loaded up and gone, because we can't have the buses waiting on the hill for 10 minutes while every one of the students and every one of the parents wait to get dismissed. We have tried this for the five years I've been here a lot of different ways. With all due respect, nobody really listens particularly well to it. So this is going to be the buses leave first, period. And we need them to leave first because they do need to get to the other buildings. It does cut down a little bit of class time at the end of the day. But again, as we talked about earlier, the timing, the tapering at the end of the day is really important. As part of the form, speaking of buses, as part of the form that is shared, anyone who has already registered for bus transportation is guaranteed a seat on the bus. However, if you've used, if you registered for bus transportation back at the beginning of the year and never used it, we need to know so we can make the correct accommodations. There are no more rules or restrictions per se. I mean, students have to be masked on the bus, but there are no more rules about, you know, where kids, how long kids are on the bus, windows having to be open. All of those have changed. Students are allowed to sit next to one another. I believe there are still assigned seats. If there's a situation where a bus is either at capacity or overextended, and there's someone who may need bus transportation, that contact goes to Ms. DeYoung at central office. And if you're not sure, that's also something to check off on that form, and somebody from the central office, transportation office, will get in touch with you. Admittedly, Mr. Dimeglio and I have very little to do with either the bus ride or bus routes or the capacity of them, but we will work with you if that's an issue. We do have one bus that I know is really, really tight. I can't remember which number it was exactly, but we have one that's pretty tight. And if there are more students who are trying to get onto it, it may not be able to be accommodated at this time. In terms of safety procedures, again, not anything really a surprise. None of this is changing, with the exception of that third bullet down. So we still have mask breaks. We're still requiring masks at all times. We're still having students help us with wiping down their desks before and after class, or more than likely after class. We have access to hand sanitizer all over the building. The couple of things that we want to share a little bit more specifically, COVID-related illness, COVID-related sickness, still goes through Ms. Schiller, the school nurse. The couple of things that are going to look a little different is that third bullet. It's 6 feet apart where possible. We have a lot of space here. We have a good amount of space here. And we've had people that have done a really fine job at organizing their classrooms and their spaces and our unstructured spaces, if you will, to make sure that we stay 6 feet apart. We're going to commit still to 6 feet where we can. If a class is at 17 or 18 in terms of the number of students in it, it can still be at 6 feet, which is a wonderful thing. When we move that down to 5 feet, and this is again a typical high school classroom, we could still fit up to 25 or 26 people. What we're going to be discussing with our staff is if they have our average class size here is about 21. If they have a class of 21 and three students are not there, they can come pretty close to having everybody still at 6 feet. And I understand the CDC's guidelines about 3 feet, and we are still following the 6 feet guidance with respect to contact tracing per our own
study and more by Thursday afternoon.
And our CDC. Sorry about that. That was somebody else. I just hit mute there. Sorry. The other thing that could happen is that there might be a class of 22 or 23 where the students are mostly 5 feet apart, but if a couple students aren't there, teachers will have the ability to rearrange on the fly to get students back to 6 feet. That's not a requirement though. And for the most part, we believe we'll be able to have students at 5 to 6 feet in most classrooms. We have probably 4 or 5 where that'll be a little bit more difficult, 4 or 5 total classes, and we'll work individually with those spaces. For example, any class that's taken, there's one section of our intro to video class where there's 23 students, and that's taught in a room that's fairly small. And so we have worked with the teacher on a way to partner both with our auditorium and our cafeteria where we can space kids out and have kids work in and out of the lab using computers as necessary and having the other students using the cameras outside that classroom so that we have a plan. I know Mr. Dimeglio and I have been working, he more so than me, on the logistics of furniture and making sure things are all adequately measured. And I don't know if there's anything else you want to talk about, Mr. Domeglio, on that front. I know that we have a couple of places where we are, like, for example, there are a couple of places where, you know, if it were not 5 feet, 10 and a half inches, we could get even more desks, but we are sticking to the 6 feet.
Oh, absolutely. Especially in the cafeteria. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but yeah, we're definitely going with the 6 feet whenever we can. And honestly, we're very fortunate to have class sizes, physical class sizes that are probably bigger than normal. So, you know, we're sticking to 6 feet if we can, but obviously we've, you know, a regular class, you know, could go down to four if we really needed to, but we're trying not to.
So lunch, I think one of the big questions everybody has had has been about lunch. We've reconfigured our cafeteria a couple of different ways, both around, we met today with Mrs. Haley and Mrs. Ouellette about how lunch is going to work. From the state, and there is no wiggle room on this, the students must be seated 6 feet apart during lunchtime. Lunch and breakfast are free for the remainder of the year. That's through the Commonwealth. What we want to share is that our lunch block is going to start around 10:30, and we are going to move to about five lunches. We're going to move to five lunches, not about five lunches. We're estimating about 5 to 525 students that are going to be electing to be fully in person, which comes out to between 100 and 105, 115 students per lunch. Clearly, they won't all fit in the cafeteria. The cafeteria can fit about 36 students at 6 feet apart. That gives us really two or three other areas for students to eat lunch. The first is the gym. On either side of the gym, where students are absolutely far apart, where the even if they're facing each other, they're on opposite sides of the gym. We could fit about 70 students on both sides of the gym. So that's another 140 seats potentially. We also have the flexibility to have students eat outside, and we have the back area of the building. And we're going to be, I don't want to say not allowing students to use the front part of the building, but from a security and safety standpoint, we would prefer they stay in the back. We have a couple of areas where kids could sit in the front, but we're going to really stick to the back right outside the cafeteria. Mr. Domeglio and I are working on getting some picnic tables that are organized for out there. But if students want to bring a beach towel and sit out in the back and, just sit out in the grass in the back area. In the past, we've reserved that for seniors, but now we're going to try and have as many people as we can spread out to eat. The other option that we have is our students who have senior privilege. And when they have that senior privilege block or they have parental permission, that block is now long enough for those students to potentially go home for lunch or to leave and come back. Because if you do the math, 22 minutes times five lunches is 110 minutes. So that's a pretty good chunk of time for students to go and come back. The students who have senior privilege are typically leaving the building earlier. And this is not different because they have reached the age of majority. If they have not reached the age of majority, they would need parental permission to leave and come back. But if they have a class during that block and they're cutting class essentially by leaving for the lunch block, that could be problematic. And that's where we would start talking about revoking privileges. And we don't want to do that. Our students are generally pretty responsible, this senior class in particular, but that will also help cut down on some of our numbers. Now, truthfully, lunch is free here, and I don't know when you're going to get another free lunch as an 18 plus year old, so they probably won't have too many people leaving. And we only have a few students each block, but we did want to extend that opportunity, particularly to the seniors. And there are some seniors who may have an early college block or an internship block followed by a privilege block. And if that's the case, we're having them leave the building. There is probably not going to be a la carte items for purchase. And if there is, that's going to, it's, everything is cashless. So for students who are planning on buying, again, if you're taking lunch, it's literally taking lunch. It's not being charged. But if there happens to be a la carte items, this would be something we would be looking at down the road. It's going to be cashless. Students can put money in, or families can put money into their student accounts using My School Bucks, same as they did in the past, or bringing a check into the building, and we'll have the cafeteria staff deposit it. However, I want to be clear, we are not saying there's going to be a la carte items as there's been in the past, like kids coming in, get an extra bag of chips or ask for a package of cookies or a brownie or something. We are not likely to be doing that, particularly in the beginning, but it is something we're considering. And because we don't want to have an entire one of these town halls just around lunch in a few weeks, that's something we wanted to be pretty clear about. We're not going to have schedule changes. Some schools, because of the capacity, it has happened with my own children. They have homeroom changes, or they have schedule changes. We will not. Students have been kind of working in this schedule as they have all year. And we did that very deliberately. So even if we have a class that's a little bit bigger, we're going to work with the space rather than start blowing up student schedules at this stage of the game. The other piece of this that is different, and I say different because it's not, it's just different than what we've been dealing with, is with respect to absences. Students who are supposed to be here in person are not here. They will be marked absent. If students are symptomatic and they get put into a COVID protocol, they have a fever, they have cold symptoms, they're not feeling well, they'll contact the nurse just as you would any other day. And if the nurse or our administration gives permission, those students will be able to log into classes remotely. What can't happen is the student who wakes up in the morning and says, oh, I'll just be remote today. That is no longer allowed. That full remote students who don't show up are going to be marked absent. We expect them logged in at 7:30 every morning. And if a student isn't going to log in for any reason, if a student isn't going to be here and is supposed to be for any reason, we ask that they get called in and called out to our attendance line. We are going to be pretty, consistent is the word with this, because the days of I don't feel like going, I'll just log in and then I'll shut off my camera and I'll walk away and the teacher's on. No, if a student is in person, they're in person. If a student is remote, he or she is remote. And if a student isn't well and they can't come in because they're not well, administration will take care of green lighting any change to that. If a student tests positive or is a close contact, same thing. We don't want kids to fall behind in their school, but we also need to realize that in-person school means in-person school. But if kids are sick, they're sick, and we don't want them coming in if they're sick. Next, for families who stay remote, we're still streaming, and that'll be binding. There is some flexibility in the guidance from the commissioner that if families want to change, we can entertain it, but it's not an automatic. As far as the status quo with streaming, I should have put a little asterisk next to that too. Because in some classes, and I'll use the class I was in this morning, Mr. DiMeglio and I were in a construction engineering class. Was that today or yesterday?
Yesterday.
It was today? The days all kind of run together. And there were students working on power tools. And there were today 9 students in there. When that class comes back full in person, there could be 16 students in there. If there's a remote student, and again, I don't mean to disparage the remote experience. Our focus is going to be on the students who are in the room because of safety. So it may look like that student is working more independently if they're a remote student, because that's just the reality of having 15, 16 kids in the room, one or two at home in a class like that. If there is, I'll pick on math for a second. If a math teacher is doing direct instruction at the beginning of the class I was in today, I was in a calculus class, and Mrs. Pryor was working through some problems with some students. The student who was at home was able to chime in and say, "Hey, Mrs. Pryor, I have a question." And that was with like 5 minutes left in the class. That's exactly how it will work. However, in the same breath, I should say that if Ms. Pryor says, "Hey guys, I'm going to teach the new material in the first 5 minutes, and then you're working independently," the students who are working independently will be working independently whether they're at home or whether they're in the classroom. That's different than asynchronous, which is we're providing you an assignment and you're on your own. We're not going to be doing any of that. The word on the street for MCAS is that there's not a lot of certainty about it. The dates have been moved around quite a bit, and the MCAS as it's supposed to be offered for sophomores and juniors. And I put this under families who stay remote, because for the kids who are in the building, we'll work it into the day. For the students who are remote, we are being told that students who are remote are going to have to come into the building to take MCAS. We will get those dates, those times, and we will do our best to make sure that the students who are remote feel comfortable coming in, because we realize there's a lot of concern about it. There is a way, we're waiting for some guidance on this, for families to opt out of MCAS formally. Keep in mind that for students in grades 9, 10, and 11, it's still a requirement for graduation. So even if students opt out of it, they are going to have to take it at some point. Anything on MCAS, Mr. D?
No, basically it starts in May and ends in June. And that goes for the AP testing as well. So we have, quite a few days where we're testing, and we're working through the logistics of that. So yeah, grade 10 and 11 need to test this year for ELA, math, and obviously grade 9 for science. So we're just waiting on some little nuances to figure that out. Grade 8 is still up in the air at this point. And that's, that is significant. So we don't really know about that yet. So no answers on that yet.
So what our schedule is looking like is the first week back, you'll see that there's an asynchronous day built in. We are allowed to have one where we are going to use that time to really plan our seating charts and get our furniture in line and make sure we're ready to go. We were initially intending for that day to be April 7th, get some students in for a couple of days, and then have April 7th be the day where we hit pause, reset, do what we've got to do here. And then you'll see the following week is entirely a full week of schedule. However, we may, and we are going to let everybody know this the beginning of next week, we may move that asynchronous day to April 5th, have the students work asynchronously on that day while we get the building ready, and then just run through it straight through from the 6th through the 14th. We have some staffing issues coming in that week with a number of different variables, particularly April 4th, 5th, and maybe the 6th. But our hope is that by the end of this week, if not the beginning of next week, you will know what day all of those buses are running, all those kids are coming in, and it'll be no later than April 6th. It'll be no earlier than April 5th, and it'll depend on what our needs are for our staff. In fairness, we need to discuss this with them, because we've been sort of putting them on hold, and we have our staff meeting tomorrow where we're going to just get a sense of whether they want to have the kids in and then make the adjustments, or if they want to have it all laid out ahead of time. There's feelings in both ends. Some other et ceteras, and if busing, if there are questions about busing, please call Andy Young. She's at Central Office. The number is right there, the extension to Central Office, 104. If you've registered for the bus, if you're planning on taking the bus, or if you have questions about the bus, she is the guru. She is going to get back in touch with you. For sports, there has been some discussion of late about, sports on campus, sports with students staying in the building. We do have to provide the Board of Health with a protocol for locker rooms. They are allowed to be at 50% capacity based on the phase four, step one of the reopening guidance from Governor Baker and the EEA and DPH. We'll be getting that together hopefully in the next few days before the students are back in. It'll probably be something like a phased use of the locker room. The locker rooms have not been used all year, so this is brand spanking new to us. So appreciate your patience on that. We do have to get that approved by the Board of Health, or at least get their green light. And with respect to senior events, sent something out yesterday. We've moved graduation from Sunday to Saturday. We'll be watching the weather pretty closely. The plan would be right now for, I'll start with the prom. The prom right now is scheduled for May 14th, and it is scheduled to be just seniors, not a junior senior prom. It is only a senior prom. And when I say it's only a senior prom, as of right now, it is only our seniors. We are very restricted by the number of participants, guests we can have for an indoor venue. And Pleasant Valley has been awesome. Miss Pryor and her officers have been incredible with helping us wade through this. And the feedback from the parents and the kids has helped us with this. If that changes and we're able to make some decisions to adjust, the guidance from the state literally was push the prom off as late as you can because things might get better. The problem is we can only go so far because we want graduation to happen first, not graduation, then we want prom to happen before graduation. I'm sorry. As far as graduation, it has been moved to June 5th. We'll have more details about that for senior parents. I know there's a bunch of underclassmen here who are saying, well, is it always going to be on Saturday? Historically, it was on Saturday, moved to Sunday here about 7 years ago before my time. Would we go back to Saturday? Right now, it's Saturday for this year only. Our plan is to do it outdoors on the turf, Saturday at 10 a.m. If the weather is not great for Saturday morning, but is going to be better for Saturday evening, we would move to Saturday evening before we would move to Sunday afternoon. But it will be no later than Sunday at 2 because PSG has their events scheduled. And if we're dealing with a complete washout weekend and a hurricane is coming through, or, you know, a bomb cyclone or something else, it's New England, you never know. We will we'll adjust accordingly to make sure that the kids are able to have an event for them and their families, or the young men and women are able to have an event for their families. AP tests also, as far as upperclassmen go, they can be done remote. And the students will be working with their teachers and Ms. Smith from our guidance department in the next couple of weeks to, I guess the word is they'll commit to whether they're doing the online or the in per or the at home remote version. If it's at home, it's fully online. If it's in school, there's a paper and pencil version. You know, there are two dates that we have to commit to. We've worked with our teachers on that, and we should be able to get those in the hands of the students in the next few days. The other senior event that we are still working on planning is the scholarship and awards night. We don't have a final plan for that yet because, again, we want to try and put things off as long as we can to make sure we can get the right number of people in, and we'll do the best we can with what we have. Next steps, and you've seen this sent already, and I apologize for the first email. For some reason, when I copied and pasted from a blog site, the survey was sending you back there. That's a shortened URL. If you get off of this meeting in the next 5 minutes and you're like, I made my decision, that would be ideal. That's why we did this at 6 o'clock. If you want to call your friends or, you know, go out, there's still some sunlight, you know, have a, you know, a barbecue and talk about 6 feet apart that, you know, what you want to do with your kids. You have until the 26th to respond, and we'll be sending our additional info next week. If you've already done the survey, you're done. If you have a change, send or give the office a call. If you, you know, sent it in and you said, hey, I wanted to be fully remote, but now I think I want to be fully in person. Call the main office, speak with any of the secretaries, and they'll be able to change that. You don't have to resubmit the survey, but you only have to submit it once. And if you have submitted it, thank you. If we haven't gotten a response by Friday morning, we're going to start making phone calls. So we hope everybody's able to get those calls in as soon as possible. I'm going to go check the chat, Mr. Domeglio. If there's anything I'm forgetting, I'm putting you on the spot. This is called vamping in the broadcast world. Just, you know, tell everybody about your grandson if you got nothing else to talk about.
Because he was awesome this weekend. He was great. Yeah, he did visit, and he's something. Almost 2 years old, and what a little guy. Loved riding on the tractor.
I see a hand up. Did we answer the question of the person whose hand is up? Is my question, or would you like to unmute yourself? And if I don't hear you, unmute yourself, because every other question that was in the chat was up. Oh, the hand is down. Great. So every other question that was in the chat has been answered, unless there's going to be something else that pops in there. When is the seniors' last day? I was asked that by a few seniors this week. It's probably going to be May 21st. We have to look at legally how many days they're required to be in school and how many days before graduation we're allowed to let them out. But we're looking at May 21st being their final day of classes, having the week of May 24th to 28th be their time to finish up any projects, last grades, turn in materials, et cetera, et cetera. We would do graduation rehearsals on June 1st and 2nd. And, then we would have graduation on the 5th. There's a question in there. Is there a chance an in-person student could end up remote? Well, if a student, due to a teacher being absent. So there's always a possibility of a teacher being absent. That's absolutely a possibility. If a teacher is out, we will do our best to treat it the way it was beforehand, but we would never send the student home. We would cover the class here. There's a possibility a teacher who may be on quarantine is teaching remotely. If that's the case, we would absolutely still have somebody covering the class and the teacher would just be teaching remotely, but we would never send a student home. The only thing that would send a student home are symptoms or close contacts. And again, if somebody is symptomatic in a class and they're 4 feet away and somebody comes back positive, there's an increased risk of there being a close contact. I'm not gonna lie, because we are still honoring the 6 foot radius for close contacts. But we would not send students home otherwise. Will school clubs be able to meet in person? Most of our clubs have started to meet in person in some way, shape, or form. The student council has been meeting in person, and the hope would be that I think National Honor Society has been meeting in person. Science Olympiad has been entirely virtual, and yearbook has been a little bit of both. So we're hoping that the rest of the clubs will be able to meet. We still do not, as of yet, we don't have a drama advisor, which has put a wrinkle in having drama meet or musical. But we will hopefully have the organizations, that can meet in person. And I see a hand up. So you're unmuted and you're up.
Are you able to tell us what the percentage is right now of how many of your students 8 through 12 are remote and how many are doing the hybrid right now?
Right now? Right now, it's about 120 odd students are fully remote. So it's about 20%. And about the same number are in like every day. So like in that high need sort of coming in some derivation more than 2 days. So some of them it's 3 days, some of them it's 4 days, a lot of them it's 5 days. Some of our kids who have just some more pervasive needs, and the rest would be 2 day a week hybrid. So our estimation by the time all is said and done is that we will probably have anywhere from 500 on the low side to 525, 540 even on the high side, full in, and 50 to 60 that'll end up staying remote.
Okay.
At this point.
Okay. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. It's a good question. And
why won't it let me?
I think that about does it. The last thing, and I don't have a slide, but I think it goes without saying at this point. If you have specific questions, if you have things that you're unsure about, and I'm gonna hit stop share. If you have things that you're unsure about, you have things that you're not certain about, you have questions about, you know, protocols, you can reach out to me, you can reach out to Mr. DiMeglio. The person that you probably would get the best information from is Ms. Schiller, our school nurse. I'm not sure if she's on and wants to add anything. She's, I think, somewhere on a cloud getting sainted tonight, because she has just been an absolute godsend this year. And she's talked me off of more than one ledge, much to some other people's chagrin who would hope that she would push me off that ledge, I think, once or twice. But Mrs. Schiller, if you're here and there's anything you want to add beyond your overall awesomeness, and as an honorary member of the social studies department, feel free to chime in. You are here. I do see you here. I'm making you unmute. There you go.
I'm here. Thank you for all those kind words. It's been quite a ride.
Nice halo. It looks good.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it looks good.
No, I have nothing to add other than the protocols are all going to be the same. We're going to keep everything, you know, if your child's sick, give me a call. We're trying to keep the kids that are sick at home. We're going to do the best we can to, you know, get everybody back in and up and running. So
the next bit of information is information you owe us. If you haven't submitted already, please let us know whether you're planning on being full remote or full in. If you're not sure, you want to talk about it with somebody, also let us know. And then next week you will get some notification from us about what the week of April 5th will look like. So with that, I'm going to hit stop record, and we will say,